Hey everybody, welcome into another episode of Investing in Real Estate. I'm Clayton Morris, she is Natalie Morris, and this is the podcast where we focus on buy and hold real estate for the purposes of creating legacy wealth. That's wealth that you could hand down to your family when you pass on. So how do you do that? Well, you've got to create passive income, you've got to add to your overall net worth, you've got to build assets, right? This isn't just a paycheck job that we're talking about here where you look forward to a raise every few years. That's not how you build wealth. We do it through real estate, and we do it in affordable markets across the country, and that's how we've been able to reach financial freedom. So that's what we try to teach here on the podcast. And a question that we get commonly here on the show has to do with insurance. People, I would say maybe like twice, three times a week, we get an email into the office asking the question about umbrella insurance policies. What type of insurance do you get on your properties? Should we get, mostly the question comes down to, should we get an umbrella insurance policy? So today, this episode is all about insurance. We're going to dive deep on some of the commonly asked questions. We're going to give you some great answers. And we're going to kind of tell you how we've done it and maybe how we've done it wrong and some of the insurance stuff that we are going to start to add to our portfolio. How are you doing today?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did my homework because we have gotten a lot of questions about insurance, and usually I'm kind of like, well, this is what we get because that's what our insurance provider told us to get. And that's not a good enough answer. And I realized, you know, when I was sort of, I haven't said that to anyone who asked, at least not in that intonation. But I realized, okay, it's time to do a little bit of homework and really understand what it is we're purchasing. Because I've always kind of assumed that whatever the insurance expert sold me was good enough. That's, you know, in hindsight, that's really stupid. Stupid of me.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, I always understood what we were insuring our properties for. But I didn't understand like what's missing, right? And what is necessary for a complete insurance strategy, I guess, for lack of a better word. So I went on Amazon and I found a book. You know, for me, maybe some people can sort of Google search and look in question forums and sort of complete their knowledge with the web. But for me, I really need it in a complete book. So I found a book called Wise Up, The Savvy Consumer's Guide to Buying Insurance. And it's written by a nonprofit organization that's a consumer rights group. So they're not sponsored or they don't take any money from any insurance providers at all.
That's like Coca-Cola doing, hey, sugar's good for you. And this study is brought to you by Coca-Cola. Right. So this is a totally independent look at insurance today on the show.
Right. And so let me see. I can tell you United Policyholders is the consumer advocacy group.
Okay.
And yes, we will have a link to it in the show. And really it's you can buy it as a paperback, but it's about the size of a Kindle single. I read it in less than a day. It doesn't take very long, but it did sort of fill in the gaps of my knowledge of insurance. And there were a couple of things that I did not realize before. For example, I didn't know what a clue report is. Do you know what a clue report is?
So I've heard about this before. A clue report is basically almost like a credit report, but for your capacity to, like if someone's going to give you insurance, right? You go to buy a car and you're going to get insurance on the car. There's like a clue report that's kind of hidden. I guarantee you in a few years, Congress is going to make this more transparent, but right. Because now we have access to our credit reports, you know, that they have to make available.
After reading this book, I do not feel like Congress is on our side when it comes to insurance, but
Congress is not on our side on anything. Just special interests. So maybe they will keep it hidden. But yeah, clue report basically is like your credit report, but for your capacity to get insurance. They're going to look at like everything in your family and decide, well, how much are we going to jack up rates for you?
Right. So it stands for Comprehensive Loss and Underwriting Exchange, and it's a national database of people's insurance claim history. So have you been in car accidents? Do you file claims on that? Do you file claims on your house a lot? What kind of homes do you live in? That kind of thing. So there's a database about you and you have the right to see it. You can request your clue report once a year. There's also a clue report on any given house as well. You can request a clue report on your house but you have to be the homeowner. So if you're thinking of buying a house and you want the CLUE report on that house, you have to ask the current owner to request it. You can't request it if you don't own the home. So this book makes the point that it's a good idea to see it, and you can refute things if you find errors. You can ask them and point out misreported claims as well. So that's sort of one thing that I learned that I thought was worth knowing about. This is this sort of second, maybe it's an offshoot, but we're going to talk about umbrella policies. Don't worry. I don't mean to make you
don't bury
the
lead.
To the end. Right. But I want to sort of, unpack the insurance industry a little bit before we get to what an umbrella policy is. This I sort of pointed out to Clayton as he was walking through the kitchen the other day. I said, you know, when we rent a car and we say, oh, we don't need the insurance because our credit card covers it, because most credit cards offer insurance on rental cars when you use that card to pay, right?
Right.
Well, it turns out that's true, but that only covers damage to the rental car and not liability. So if I go out and hit a pedestrian and hurt that person, the credit card is not going to pay their medical bills. That's on me because I've only been covered for damage to the car, not liability. Now, usually your personal auto policy will cover you for a few days on a rental car if you go on vacation. But say I was traveling for business, then my personal policy doesn't cover business travel. It only covers personal travel. So if you go on a business trip and decline the insurance and then use that car and go and hit someone or hit something, like say you hit a national monument, then you're liable for that damage. For instance, I once was driving my mom's rental car in Puerto Rico and I hit a humongous rock, and I wasn't covered on that policy. I wasn't even 25 yet. So my mom then had to go and report that damage to the car to the, and this was this, you know, Puerto Rico is part of the United States, but it doesn't completely work as well. So they were like, well, you have to pay for this. And it was a humongous deal. So read that fine print and be very careful when you do that if you're traveling for business, especially if you're coming to see your properties.
Okay, so let's talk about our properties first. What we've kind of been doing, let me just tell you a cautionary tale and then we'll kind of dive a little deeper. So
you don't think hitting a rock in Puerto Rico is a good cautionary tale?
Well, it's a good cautionary tale, but I just don't think it has much to do with
it. Super embarrassing because I was sort of acting like I was cool, you know, but I don't know why I was driving like this.
Karma.
For sure.
Remember that time we were in California, we were driving, you were acting like you were cool and you were on the phone and you're not allowed to talk on the phone while you're driving in California, and the police officer pulled you over?
Yeah, I remember that too.
Mm-hmm. That humbled you. So I like to use that to my advantage anytime she wants to criticize my driving.
Right. Anyway, what was your story, honey?
See, change the subject. So I have a friend who owns many, many properties, and he never gets insurance on his properties. He buys like C-class neighborhoods. He's like, why? I don't need, you know, I don't want to get insurance on my properties because, you know, what happens? He thinks of it as more of as like a scam, right? So he's like, I'm going to pay the amount I'm going to pay for all of these properties in insurance. God forbid. Okay. So one of these houses eventually burns down. Then I just rebuild it. The amount of money that it would cost me to have insurance on all these properties for years, I would more than pay for that house, you know, that had burned down for $50,000. So
okay, but let me counter you with this.
Now, this isn't my argument. This I just was giving you like the worst case scenario kind of a person.
That's not the worst case scenario though, because the worst case scenario is someone comes on that property and gets hurt, and then you're now liable for their. It's not damage to the house. It's personal liability that's a bigger issue.
Okay.
So you're right in that. Most of the time, if you have a big portfolio, you might be able to save money and eventually just replace that house, maybe. But, you know, if you open your policy, and this was something I didn't really understand, you're going to have a list on your policy, most likely on the declarations page, of what you're covered. And it's going to be lettered out: coverage A, coverage B, coverage C, coverage D, coverage E, coverage F. So what this person who made that argument was saying was that I'm okay with coverage A, which covers damage to the house. So you're going to look at a house and assess what it takes to rebuild that house. Now, this is an important point. It has nothing to do with market value. That house may be worth $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 on the open market, but you can rebuild it for 30, right? So market value has no bearing. You're going to cover the house on what it would take to rebuild it. And so that's coverage A. Coverage B covers damage to other structures, such as a detached garage or a shed or a fence, something that's not attached to the house. Coverage C is going to cover your personal property. So what's inside of it, your TV, your computer, your artwork, whatever.
Right.
Coverage D covers your additional living expense. So if you can't live there because of some natural disaster, for example, during Hurricane Irene, we had neighbors that a tree fell on the whole back half of their house and they had to stay at a shelter. That means they couldn't go to work. That means they couldn't drive their car. So your insurance will then plug in those gaps to help pay for that. Now, coverage E is an important one. It covers personal liability. So when someone comes on your property and gets hurt, you're liable for that. Like say they trip on a sprinkler that you neglected to fix. Well, then you're liable for that. And that's sort of important. Coverage F is medical expenses. Like what will you pay to that person that got hurt on your property? Now, here's an anecdote that's in the book is there was a little girl that was playing Frisbee in her yard and a woman was riding by on a bike and she threw the Frisbee and it hit the lady on the bike who fell over and broke her wrist. Well, the lady was a rider. She made the argument that this injury affected her ability to make a living. So her parents then of the little girl were liable for medical expenses because of this Frisbee accident, which, I mean, it sounds so utterly ridiculous, but right. This is the society we live in. And if we don't think of these things, then, you know, you could end up in a dangerous place. So,
all right,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so that's a good, so one through, or A through E, right?
A through F.
And we're going to have links to those in the show notes. We'll have a list of those in the show notes page for this episode. So just go to our website, morrisinvest.com/episode148. And we'll have all this broken down. Now, let's just talk about our individual properties. We've never had umbrella insurance across all of our properties. We've had our individual properties and we usually
get... Before we get there though, I want to say, after I read this, I went and I looked at our policies and I wanted to make sure, were we being cheap or did we only have coverage in coverage A, which is the actual structure?
Okay.
And I was happy to see that we did have some coverage in D and E, which is additional, not D, because we don't need additional living expense coverage, but comprehensive liability and medical coverage, E and F. We did have some money there. It wasn't very much. Like if someone had gotten hurt, our insurance would cover, I want to say it was like up to $5,000 of medical bills for that person, which hopefully would suffice. You just don't know that, you know, medical bills can, I mean, that's a whole other ball of wax that medical bills can add up so fast. So you just want to, you know, kind of make sure that you think that you've got enough. If it's like $500, that's going to get you not even an x-ray,
right?
If someone really got hurt. Now, here's an important question about renter's insurance, because what if your renter had a big raging party and then someone got hurt, right? And then whose fault is that? Is it your fault or is it the renter's fault? Most of the time that would be the renter if they had, you know, it really is going to depend. There was an anecdote in the book that someone had a deck party on a rental home. And the landlord had not kept up the deck, but someone fell off the deck and got hurt. And it was the renter that was liable for that, not the landlord. Why that is, I'm not completely sure. And you can request that your tenants have renter's insurance. Usually it's not suggested unless they have up to $10,000 in value that they keep in that house.
Yeah, most of our tenants do not. Some of our tenants leave, you know, they're like, okay, I'm out of here. Remember that one house in Pennsylvania? They just left and they left their couch and they left their TV stand and they're like, we don't even need this anymore. And then we trashed it out and threw it out, you know?
And a lot of times, you know, people who are renting more affordable homes just don't have the extra cash to pay for this renter's policy. I know in my life when I've rented before, I have had renter's insurance and in some cases I haven't, just depending on my financial situation at the time. There are some states which you can require your tenants to have, and there are some states in which you just can request and hope the best. You cannot require renter's insurance on Section 8 tenants, though.
Today's episode is brought to you by Harry's. Oh, the fantastic razor company. I love these guys. The only razors that I use. Every Christmas, I say, Natalie. Well, I don't say that. I say, honey. You can call her Natalie. I say, honey, please get me Harry's shave gel and some new Harry's razors. Every year in my stocking, that's what she gets me. I used to hate to shave. I would go on the air. I would shave, of course, before my show. But then for the few days that I was off, I would grow out like a beard. And I'm like a werewolf. Until I start, because I hated my old razors. They always made my skin irritated. The gel I used to use was just awful. I just hated doing it. It was a bother. So I just went without it. Until I started using Harry's razors. I'm saying they are the best razors I've ever used. I got a set from my friend Mike actually a few months ago, and he has like really irritable skin also. And he said, holy smokes, I can't believe this. And he's not given a hyperbole at all. He threw out all of his old razors, threw out his old gel. It's the only thing he uses from now on. I love these guys. I'm so excited that they're sponsoring today's podcast. The reason that I love these guys is because Jeff and Andy, who created the company, they got so fed up. You know, they would go to the drugstore and they would see razors behind a glass case that you needed to ask the attendant to open. You'd spend like $17 to buy new razors. Ridiculous. And what they noticed is that one big razor company had like relentlessly increased prices. They reaped immense profits and they didn't pass any of that on to their consumers. So Jeff and Andy had an idea. They said, wait a second, what if we could take less profit and sell directly to you over the internet? So you would save all this money. So Harry offers their blades at half the price. They bought their own blade factory in Germany. They literally went to Germany and bought their own razor blade factory so that they could do this. $2 a blade instead of $4 is what you'd normally pay at the drugstore. That's their plan. It's been fantastic. And guess what? You can try them out for free. Right. If you just go to harrys.com/real estate, go to that website, harrys.com/real estate, you're going to be able to get a free set. So you'll get to try their razor, beautiful, nice blade too, and the handle. So you can actually put it down on the counter and it looks great. I keep mine right out on our sink because it actually looks really, really nice. So you're going to get a weighted ergonomic razor. You're going to also get 5 blades with a lubricating strip and a trimming blade, which is wonderful. You're also going to get a rich lathering shave gel, and it's the only shave gel that I use anymore. I don't use any of the other crap that's out there. And you're going to get a travel blade cover as well if you're traveling, all for free. You just have to cover $3 for shipping and handling, and they'll pay for the rest of it. And you can't beat that. So go to harrys.com/real estate. Try them out. If you shave regularly and you hate it, you're going to love shaving with Harry's. You're going to save a lot of money. And it's what the only razor that I now use. I absolutely love these guys. Thanks, Harry's, so much for sponsoring the podcast. I love you guys. I truly do. Well, and here's another thing. You know, this is something that the hedge funds totally missed the ball on. And this is why so many of their houses sat vacant and why a lot of these hedge funds went out of business and weren't able to provide housing for their tenants and also able to provide returns for their investors is because they had really onerous terms for their tenants. And if you're going to start going out there requiring your tenants to get renter's insurance, guess what? Your houses are going to be vacant for way longer. So you can do that. I wouldn't suggest it. We don't do that.
It tends to be an extra burden on people who are already just making ends meet. Is it a good idea? Of course. But, you know, you're really putting something extra on a family that it's not, I don't know. It's not, you know.
Bottom line is.
It's not your family. It's not your call.
And the reason.
It's not a good policy. You know.
Yeah. And the reason, like, for instance, that particular tenant, and you look at landlord laws across the country, that's why we're in landlord friendly states, right? So in that particular situation with the deck and the deck party, the reason, you know, it could have been because they never notified and let them know, the landlord know that this deck had a problem or that they were complete, you know, if they never notified them that there was any kind of an issue, then the landlord would not have known, right? And so therefore it falls to the renter. Like there's responsibility
maybe,
on the renter.
Or maybe they sort of maxed out the weight limit on that deck and that sort of becomes their, you know, but if someone gets hurt And then, you know, you don't want to be liable for someone's medical bills. That's a big deal.
So, like, bottom line, let's cover our butts, right? So we want to cover our butts on the structure, which is what we've always done. But you dug deeper and found that, okay, we have some medical coverage in our policies, which is
good.
And
liability.
And liability.
Well. Right.
How much liability do we have?
It varies from policy to policy. And
from state to state.
I actually have only just uncovered. You know, I've been sort of looking through our, I usually get these declarations of insurance pages so that we can close on a property. And I'm like, good, I fulfilled that requirement. But
right.
I haven't actually looked to question myself and say, is that right? And, you know, you want to be frugal about insurance, but you don't want to be cheap. And those are two very different ways to be. For instance, this book makes the point that when you shop online through one of those online comparison websites that tells you, you know, you can get insurance for this much from this company and this much for this company. Well, that's not really comparing apples to apples because insurance companies use online algorithms to take data about you from what you're doing otherwise on the web, and they make an estimate of how high they can quote you before you just go away and find someone else.
This is outrageous. I hope people are paying attention to this. So because of your web history, you know, when you're searching Amazon for buying a pool for the kids, you know, like a kiddie pool, and then you're buying like a new iPhone and you're kind of surfing the web that afternoon, all of that data then stays as cookies in your browser, right? So it's being tracked. And then you decide to go over to one of these insurance websites to get comparable quotes. They're looking at your web history from the cookies that they're seeing on your in your browser, and then they're jacking up your rates higher. So that's why I don't use, you know, we should not be using those online websites. I mean, we use our own individual insurance people in our towns, like Danny, and we've got Ash, we've got our other great insurance people that we use. They're the ones that are going to pull together some quotes for us and give them to us, not our web browser.
And it's a good idea to get a few quotes if you really want to make sure that you're shopping prudently for insurance. You know, some insurance providers, like you see on their office, it says State Farm, Joe Schmo, right? Clearly that person is a dealer of State Farm insurance. But then you'll see like an independent insurance person in your town that just says like, you know, Love You Insurance Company. And that person, that's a great name, right?
Yeah.
LUV. That person is a dealer. That person can shop several insurance companies for you.
Right, like a broker.
And they take a commission based on the policy they send you. It may or may not be in your best interest. It may or may not be the cheapest or the best coverage. And basically, you just have to look through, like, what do they offer on A, B, C, D, E, and F? And then, you know, what, and then compare how much it costs. You know, you do want to take into account other things like, is it easy to work for them? For instance, we had a lot of hurricane damage during Irene and Sandy, and we worked with Travelers. I have no reason to tell you this. I don't have any, you know, deals with Travelers, but they covered what they said they would, and they were relatively easy to work with. I mean, other than the fact that it was hard to get a hold of them because everyone was calling them during the hurricane, but they paid us out in a relatively timely manner, and they gave us reasonable quotes on how to replace these certain things that were damaged. So, you know,
yeah,
you want to take that kind of thing into account.
So when we look at our policies, you know, we, on a $40,000 house, we'll usually get like replacement coverage that covers like $50,000, right? So God forbid the house burns down, we get a check for $50,000 basically, in the value of that house. And then we're getting a little bit of liability coverage and a little bit of medical coverage. But we're not going crazy. We're not insuring that house for $80,000 or $70,000. And by the way, that insurance company is not going to let you do that, right? They're going to look at it and say, all right, what's reasonable? That, okay,
right.
You bought it, the market value is $50,000. You bought it for $40,000 after you've done all the rehab on it. Okay, we're going to cover it up to $50,000. If you want to push it to $60,000, you're going to have to prove to us, since you only paid $40,000 for it, that there's something else going on here. Did you add like a pool? You know, like to
right.
give that justification for it being pushed up to 60,000. And then, you know, this is how they, I mean, this is how so many people like in the mafia have taken advantage of this kind of thing over the years. You know, it's like get the maximum insurance and then just burn the house down. And
right.
then, you know, try to get twice the value of the house. So we don't do that. We try to keep it close so that, you know, God forbid, yes, the house does burn down. Then we'll clear the lot
then
and build a new one.
Then you can rebuild it. Right.
Right. For the same
amount. It has nothing to do with market value.
Right.
Because maybe that becomes a hot new area where there's all kinds of new nightclubs. People really want to live there, but it still only costs $50,000 to rebuild that little tiny bungalow. That's what you should insure it for. You don't need more because of market value.
Yeah, you're not going to get a $200,000 policy on a $50,000 house.
Right. And now if you file claims on this house for things that are, you know, even things that you could otherwise pay for, those claims go on your CLU report and on the CLU report for the house. And most states allow insurers to freely charge the customers after a claim of any kind. It could have been your fault, or it could have been someone else's fault, even in your car. Like someone else hits you, if you file that claim, they can raise your rates just because. Some states put limits on those charges, but most of them do not. So they're fully allowed to do whatever they want just because you've called them on the phone with a claim. So you want to really think twice before you file these claims. That and the cookie thing we just talked about, you know, the new Trump administration just signed a bill that said that your internet service provider can sell all of your data. And you might think, why do they want that? Well, here's one reason why. These insurance companies, they want to know everything about you. For instance, what do I buy on Amazon? How often do I go to my bank accounts? How many bank websites do I go to? You might think from that, like, this person has a sizable income, so I can charge her the maximum amount of insurance. I can give her much higher quotes than I would give, say, someone else of her age and background. So if I were to then go to the library and search for insurance on a web, you know, where there's no cookies and there's no browser history, I would get a completely different set of numbers.
Right.
So, you know, those two things alone just make me all the more convinced that Congress does not have our best interest at heart. That
no,
they are,
it was outrageous.
Really,
I mean, this whole
representing
bill
representing the insurance companies and special interest groups and big business more than us.
It was outrageous. I mean, this bill last week that went through Congress, or 2 weeks ago, and it was voted on by straight down party lines. Like, not one Democrat voted for this thing. It rolled back Obama era regulations, which would have kept these, you know, your Comcasts, your Time Warners, your, you know, AT&Ts, from selling your web browsing. So let's say you're like doing research for your little girl's birthday party, right? And you're searching a bunch of different things and blah, blah, blah. Well, now they can sell that data. They have access to every website you've searched, and now they can sell that to make money off of you. And Republicans voted to roll it back and allow for it. And it was outrageous. I mean, it should not be a bipartisan thing at all. It shouldn't be, you know, Republicans versus Democrats. It's like, I thought Republicans cared about privacy, American privacy. And I'm like, really? They came out on the side of all these businesses. And you have to understand, like, Comcast, they spend so much money in lobbying that's
right.
That's how this thing got through Congress.
And they fund the campaigns of so many of these politicians. And, you know, I don't want to get overly political, but
it shouldn't be a political issue.
That's exactly right. And this is one of the ways that we suffer as consumers, because, you know, clearly nobody's in favor of this, other than Republicans who need their campaigns funded. It's incredibly expensive to run a campaign. And so if Comcast says, or, you know, the insurance lobbyist groups say, we need this data, please vote for this and we'll give you more money for your campaign. I mean, that's really how it works. And so,
how do we, as
consumers, protect ourselves? Well, now we kind of can't. You can go to the library for all your searches, or, I mean, I don't know, but
yeah, I mean, I guess, way, well, you could, we, you know what, shiny object syndrome, you and I should start our own internet service provider that doesn't sell data, right? Like, we'd have to put up towers, we'd have to run cabling to everyone's house. And now, you know, it's impossible. And, you know, just think about healthcare. Like, let's say I had like a rare disease or something, and I was just doing a lot of internet research about that disease. And now that internet service provider has that data and can sell that to somebody, and I can start receiving this, like, things will start showing up in the mail to me about this particular disease. You know, it just, like, that's the kind of crap that scares me. And I can't believe that it was voted on, like, right down party lines. Anyway, enough politics.
Right.
Let's get back to
it. I will say Clayton went to bed that night, like, looking like a scared little boy. He was kind of like, I just don't understand.
It makes me sick. It's like, this is not America. Like, what about privacy in this country? Like, just to make a dollar, and Congress just sold us all down the river. And anyway, it just made me sick. By the way, I think The Verge, verge.com, had a great – you can actually follow my Twitter stream. But I tweeted an article that said, here are all the congressmen and congresswomen who sold you down the river. and why they voted that way. And you can read that article on The Verge. And it was like, it broke down each congressperson who sold you down the river in your district. If you feel like, if you're passionate about it and you want to send them a note and tell them you're angry about it, let them know.
So. Okay. But as it relates to this podcast, you know now that these insurance companies are taking into account things about you other than just like what they can afford to sell you this coverage for, and that you are going to get tailored results because of this. So we can empower ourselves by shopping around, look at a few different websites, and then actually get on the phone. You're going to have to talk to some people if you really want to compare apples to apples. Okay. So we've said many times on this podcast that we put our properties in bundles of LLCs because that stands for limited liability company. That means that if something happens in one of your structures, they, or in one of your properties or one of your investments, whoever is going to sue you can only sue you for what is in that LLC. So they can't reach above that then and go after your kids' college savings, right? But LLC stands for limited liability, not no liability, right? So that means that they can still come after you, but you know, there are ways that someone could sort of reach outside of the LLC and get to you. For instance, here's one good example. If you're a public figure and you tell people, you know, to do something a certain way and they do it and it goes wrong for them, they can come after you. That's why we say several times on this podcast, we're not financial advisors. We're just helping you to learn what we're learning while we're doing it. So for instance, Oprah on her show had this woman come on and talk about how to make your home a more calming place. And one of the things that she said to do was put lavender oil on the light bulbs. Someone did that. Their entire house burned down because of that.
Wow.
That person then sued the Oprah Winfrey Show because she told them to do something that was unsafe. By the way, yeah, you shouldn't put lavender oil on your light bulbs.
Thank
you. But there are a lot of other ways to spread lavender throughout your home without putting it on.
Don't tell people. Electric. Don't tell right. people. You sued like Oprah.
Okay. I just said you should not do that. And so Oprah was sued for the value of this house. I don't know the result of that lawsuit, but I know that she was sued for it because she's a public figure. Now, umbrella insurance is just what we tell you it is. It's what it sounds like. It's an insurance policy that covers you for things that your insurance policies that you currently own don't. It sort of fills in the gaps, right? So if you were to say you were at a party and you were telling people, I really love buying investment real estate, it's great, this is how I do it, and then your, I don't know, Uncle Joe decides he doesn't want to do it your way, he wants to do it himself, but you know, he wants to, then it goes wrong because he doesn't do it right, and then he sues you because you told him to invest in real estate or something like that, right? So, you know, the larger your assets, the more liable you are. So a good rule of thumb is to buy $1 million more of umbrella coverage than you think you'll need. Now, this book makes the point that it's not that expensive. And I will say that I haven't actually started shopping for this yet because I just finished the book yesterday. But the size of your savings and your income affects the probability that you will be sued. And so, you know, it's a good idea to shop for this and see where you can like plug in the gaps where you might otherwise.
So it's basically gap insurance is what umbrella coverage is. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, okay. That's great to know. So how do we, is there a frame of reference on how much coverage you should get for umbrella insurance? I mean, obviously you're shopping it, but $100 more than what?
So the good rule of thumb is to buy $1 million more of umbrella coverage than you think you need. Now this, this consumer, advocacy group that wrote the book, what did I say it was? The Underwriters Policyholders, they have an app that you can use to
United Policyholders, right?
Right. That it's Android and iPhone, and you can use it to start to inventory things in your house, which is a good thing to do anyway, so that if anything were to happen, like big major natural disaster, you have a really good inventory of what you're replacing, how many TVs, how many computers, that kind of thing, what artwork, if you have, you know, some really valuable artwork, you want a professional assessment of it, because really he with the most notes wins, or she with the most notes wins. Because if they're coming after you and you say, well, I had a Picasso, but I don't have any
evidence
know,
of
proof
it.
Of that.
I had a dinner party where I showed it to people, but I don't have any photos of it.
Right.
I don't have a bill of sale.
So then you're not going to get any money for that Picasso, right? So you want as many meticulous notes about what you would need to replace as possible in your own home. And then for your investments, you know, you want good notes about what is the property, what would you be replacing? And then you want it says $1 million more. So I don't know. I mean, you just, especially with the way our medical system is in the United States, you know, it costs $200 for Tylenol in the hospital. That's right. Just the cost of it. And I'm not going to politicize that. That's just the way it is. So if you had, you know, someone actually really have some damage on and you're liable for it, you want to make sure that you could pay whatever it is you'd need to pay.
Right. So in the grand scheme of things, getting an umbrella insurance policy for not, I mean, just in general, even if you didn't own any rental properties is basically what we're saying, right? Because you never know. So we have insurance on the house that we live in now. We have, you know,
we have auto insurance.
But then there are those gaps where your kid throws a Frisbee and hits somebody in the head on the street, and that's not covered under your homeowner's insurance policy because it's not even on your home. So that's where this umbrella insurance would come in, and it would cover then also your rental properties. So it's a good idea for all of the people that have been asking us for many, many months, do you guys recommend getting an umbrella insurance policy? It's not for us to recommend, but it is something that we are going to do, right?
Yes.
Yes.
That we're going to look into.
So we are not Oprah, and, you know, but we are going to do it.
We're public figures, though. We go on television. So yeah, we're liable, but also the larger our portfolio gets, the more our exposure is. So yeah, it is a good idea. And to be honest, before we started to get these questions, I didn't even know this thing existed. So if you're one of the people who asked us this question and then prompted me to read this book, I owe you, because I've gone on an education mission, and I really have learned a lot.
Well, good, good. So yeah, we're not recommending it, but we are going to do it ourselves. So you guys, if you are interested in getting umbrella insurance just for your life, for your own primary residence, for your rental properties, and all of those gaps in your life, it's something to definitely shop around and look into. We are going to do that. And when we get our policy, we'll update you here on the podcast on what we ended up getting.
Right.
Sound like a plan?
And, you know, you really have to, it's not fun, but you have to read the fine print on this kind of thing. Like, for instance, what? You need to say something?
No, I'm just taking a breath.
Oh, okay. For instance, if you get an umbrella policy that covers RV accidents, they could have a foot limit on, you know, what happens in an RV. Like, we'll only cover RVs 30 feet or less. So what if you get one of those humongous RVs, then you're kind of screwed. So look for the things that it excludes. A lot of times these policies exclude things like floods or specific natural disasters. And you want to, I mean, that's the kind of the thing that you want, right? Like, because a lot of homeowner policies exclude flood, hurricane, certain natural disasters, right? And so this is where you'd want your umbrella policy then to fill in that gap if you haven't actually gone through and got extra flood insurance.
Got it. All right, good. So we will have a link to this book in the show notes page. Remember, this is episode 148. So just go to morrisinvest.com/episode148 for all about insurance and the breakdown from A through F on what you need. And just don't go crazy with your insurance on your individual, on your rental properties, but get some of the things that the book recommends here as well.
Yeah, I recommend this book because it's like I said, just like a little insurance manual, and it's like a Kindle single. Like I said, I finished it in a day, and I think this kind of knowledge will pay dividends for years to come because I'll become such a better shopper for this product.
Good, 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 good. Well, I'm glad we finally got this answered, and we're going to go out there and get ourselves an umbrella insurance policy. Thanks so much, everyone, for downloading and subscribing. If you're ready to take action and become a real estate investor, please, you know, book a call with our team. What we do is when you go over to morrisinvest.com, click on this schedule a consultation. And then we want to know a little bit about you. That is, you know, how many rental properties do you want to acquire? How many do you currently have? You know, what does your financial freedom number look like? We'll jump on the phone for 30 minutes. We'll talk about it and see if it's a fit and see if you're ready to take action. So there you go, everyone. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for subscribing. Now go out there, take action, and become a real estate investor. Bye, everyone.